Turn, if you will, this morning to Exodus chapter 20 once again. And we've been going through the Ten Commandments. And today we have reached all the way to commandment number 7. It's short in what is stated here in Exodus chapter 20. But if you would, direct your attention to verse 14. And it says very simply, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." Now, as we saw with last week's commandment, number 6, as we explored, "Thou shalt not kill," in the New Testament, Jesus references it and expands our understanding of it. Now, I submit to you that it's not that he gave the commandment new meaning. It meant that all the way back in Exodus when it was originally given. But the problem is that man had taken it and twisted it to only have it conform to the physical act, whether of murder or whether of adultery. And so Jesus takes it a step further and shows us what the intent of the command really is. As we look at this morning, came across this story. There was a children's pastor who listened with some concern as a fourth grade Sunday school teacher shared something that had been going on in his class. Completing a quarter's lesson on the Ten Commandments, he had asked the kids, "What is the hardest commandment for you to keep?" Now think about children and what commandment may be difficult. Which one was the hardest for them to keep? I'm sure he expected to get honor thy father and mother or something like that. But most of the children responded, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." He couldn't understand why fourth graders, I mean this is like 8-year-old, 9-year-old kids, why they would have such a difficulty with the seventh commandment. But the problem was solved when a mother quizzed her son and asked him what he thought committing the act of adultery was. Without blinking, the boy replied, "Thou shalt not talk back to adults." He thought that was adultery. I guess talking back to adults he saw as adultery. Well, I'm sure that we have a better understanding this morning of what that term adultery means in that fourth grade Sunday school class did. But you may still be a little bit foggy on what precisely is meant when the Bible speaks of adultery. And what was interesting to me is as I explored this, I realized that even among biblical scholars, they are somewhat confused or they differ on what the precise meaning of the term was. Some said that it was a man who was married, who went outside the bonds of marriage. Some said it was a man married or unmarried with a married woman, and there were just about every kind of different variation of that as you can imagine. But you know, Jesus really clears it up for us in Matthew chapter 5, and I'd like you to turn over and I have a suspicion that probably why there is such varied definitions of what precisely the term meant in biblical times can be somewhat attributed to the legalism of the Pharisees. But Jesus makes it very clear for us what is meant when the Bible speaks of adultery. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 27, Jesus says, "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart." Now, one of the commentaries that I looked at said this about Matthew chapter 5. He said, "We are not to suppose from the word here used, adultery, that our Lord means to restrict the breach of this commandment to married persons, or to criminal intercourse with such. The expressions, whosoever looketh, seems clearly to extend the range of this commandment to all forms of impurity and the counsels which follow, as they most certainly were intended for all, whether married or unmarried, seems to confirm this. So you see, Jesus explains that whosoever looketh in lust, that person has indeed committed adultery. And so with that in mind, I would submit to you that as we explore commandment number 7, thou shalt not commit adultery, as we look at that this morning, I would submit to you that you must remove every form of adultery from your life. We need to be careful that we don't take the kind of position that the Pharisees did, that it is simply the physical act of committing adultery, though certainly the commandment includes that. But we need to understand that the command for us not to commit adultery goes far beyond the physical. It includes it, but it goes far beyond that. Listen to what Wiersbe says regarding this commandment. He says, this commandment affirms the sanctity of sex. God created it, God protects it, and God punishes when His law is violated. He then goes on to say, however, Jesus went much deeper in His discussion of adultery. He showed that this can be a sin of the heart as well as a sin of the body. You know, so often we automatically associate adultery with the sin of the body. But I want us to understand this morning that not only does it include that, but it includes that sin of the heart of lusting. Wiersbe goes on to say, it is not enough simply to control the body. We must also control the inner thoughts and desires. To look at a woman for the purpose of lusting after her is to commit adultery in the heart. This does not mean, he says, that we cannot admire a beautiful person or picture, for it's possible to do that and not to sin. It is when we look with the intention of satisfying lustful desires, it is then that we commit adultery in the heart. And so this morning I want you to consider just exactly what is meant when the Bible speaks of adultery, and examine your own life and see if there are traces of that. See if this is being violated in your own life. You know, many sermons, normally when a preacher writes a sermon, you either write it as a why, as to why we should not do something or why we should do something, or you write it as a how to do something. And you know, if ever we needed something as a guideline to tell us how we can avoid being trapped by temptation and a lustful kind of thoughts, if there's ever a sermon that needed to be preached as a how, I believe it's this one. And so this morning I'd like to give you some ideas on how it is that you can prevent committing adultery in body or with the heart. And so the first thing I want you to consider this morning, the first step that you need to take in preventing this, is renounce sex outside of marriage. Renounce has the idea of voluntarily give up and to stand against. And I believe that's the type of stand that we should take against sex outside of marriage. Now, unfortunately, one of the devil's great deceptions when it comes to Christianity has been to paint the Christian life, or to paint a life that is dedicated to Christ, as a boring kind of life. And unfortunately, some Christians have even picked up his torch in this and have aided Satan in painting the Christian life as a prudish kind of life, a boring kind of life, you know, that you can't say the word sex, and that Christian people are just, in generally, boring. And I know that you're familiar with people who think that and have seen Christians portrayed that way. But I want you to listen to what C.S. Lewis says regarding the Christian and sex. He says, I know some muddle-headed Christians have talked as if Christianity thought that sex or the body or pleasure were bad in themselves. But they were wrong. Christianity, he says, is almost the only one of the great religions which thoroughly approves of the body, which believes that matter is good, that God himself once took on a human body, that some kind of body is going to be given to us even in heaven and is going to be an essential part of our happiness, our beauty, and our energy. Christianity, he says, has glorified marriage more than any other religion. And nearly all of the greatest love poetry in the world has been produced by Christians. That's a great thought. Don't allow the devil to hijack what God has created. Don't allow him to deceive you into thinking that to live the life of a believer is a life of boredom and a life of not being able to partake in the wonderful things that have been given to man. I want you to understand this morning that God created sex, and he intends for it to be enjoyed. Sex is something that's beautiful. It's something that's special. It's something that's powerful. And for that reason, God ordained that this beautiful, special, powerful thing only be enjoyed within the context of marriage. In fact, turn over, if you will, to Hebrews chapter 13. Too often, the idea that has been propagated through news media and through movies and Hollywood and secular type of outlets is that the church and Christianity is against sex. That is not true. Hebrews 13:4 says, marriage is honorable in all and the bed undefiled. In other words, sex within the context of marriage is authorized and even encouraged and even commanded by God. Marriage is honorable in all and the bed undefiled. Sex is a gift of God, but it must be enjoyed within the bond of marriage. Now, I want you to think about this with me for just a moment. It's really foolish for people who are not willing to commit to each other in marriage to be involved sexually. If two people cannot commit to each other in the marriage relationship, then they are certainly not ready to commit to each other their bodies in such an intimate way. And young ladies, I hope you'll listen to me this morning. Don't allow yourself to be deceived by the popular thinking in our world today. If a man's not willing to love you enough to commit to you to marry you, well, then you certainly should not give over that special, precious part of you to that person. And the same thing applies for a man. If a woman is not willing to commit to you in marriage, then you should not be willing to give up that very special part of you to that person. We need to renounce sex outside of marriage. We don't need to think it's funny. We don't need to allow others to talk about it and us sit idly by and just act like we're okay with that. We need to take a stand against it. We need to allow it not to be in our life. And then we need to make sure that people know what our stand is on that. Now, Hollywood would have us to believe that the only prerequisite for giving ourselves sexually over to another person is simply true love. Now, how often we see it in the movies, right? Oh, they don't need to get married. Do you really love the person? Well, I would submit to you today that if they really love the person, they would marry them. They would not be afraid to commit to a lifelong commitment. Popular shows like Sex and the City and Desperate Housewives propagate that idea that sex is not necessarily for marriage, but simply if you love each other. I want you to understand, God says that this special, beautiful, powerful thing, sex, is only to be shared between two married people. agree fully with God on this point. Don't allow yourself to even contemplate being involved sexually outside of the marriage relationship. Now, maybe you're here this morning and you say, Pastor Jimmy, I've messed up in this area in the past. I've had a problem with this, and even as you talk about it, I feel this guilt in my life. I want you to understand this morning, I'm not saying these things because I want to make you feel guilty. Part of the reason I'm saying it is because I want those who haven't been involved to understand how serious it is and not to make that mistake. But if you've made that mistake in your past, I want you to understand that there's forgiveness with God. Amen? And you can confess that to Him and He will forgive you. And just because you've messed up in the past doesn't mean you have to mess up in the future. You can make the decision right now that you're only going to allow that special thing to be between you and whoever it is that God gives you in the bond of marriage. So, renounce sex outside of marriage. Another thing that I believe you can do is refuse to look with lust. You know, we have a defense mechanism built into our bodies. If you touch something that is too hot and will burn you, your hand, without you even having to think the process through, your hand will have a reflex to be pulled away from that. Why is that? Because your body has been built in with this defense mechanism so as your body doesn't get hurt. You know, we think, oh, it'd be wonderful if I never felt pain. Yeah, but if you never felt pain, you'd put your hand on a hot stove and would get horrible burns before you even knew it. You see, that is built in so that as soon as we hit something that's too hot, our hand pulls away. You know, we need to develop the same kind of reflex when it comes to seeing an image that is going to cause us to lust. We need to develop that similar reaction, whether it's a billboard or whether it's something as a commercial on TV or something we glance at in the paper. We need to create that mechanism so that we look away. Now, unfortunately, I'm afraid with too many of us, because we are bombarded with these images all the time, we seem to have created the opposite effect, where as soon as we see that, we are drawn to it. But listen, Jesus says that if we look with lust, we've committed adultery in our heart. We need to develop that reaction to look away from those things that cause us to lust, that give us those feelings of adultery in the heart. Listen to this story about an unfaithful husband. The man was unfaithful to his wife, so he went and he sought treatment. This is an actual story. Reportedly, he has been cured of his infidelity by electric shock treatment. The treatment was administered by two psychiatrists in a London hospital who reported the experience in an issue of Pulse magazine. It's an English medical journal. The psychiatrist showed the guilty man, and we'll allow him to remain nameless, Mr. X, colored pictures of his wife and mistress alternately on a screen in a darkened room. He would go and do this for 30 minutes a day, 6 days. Whenever his mistress's picture was flashed on the screen, the unfaithful husband would receive a 70-volt electric shock every time her picture came up on the wrist. When his wife's picture appeared, a tape recording told him of the harm that he was doing to her and to their marriage by the affair that he was having with this other woman. The unfaithful husband had been married for 10 years, and his adulterous relationship had gone on for 2 years before he sought help. According to him, the shock treatment cured him. I don't know. I don't have any additional data. I don't know if you need to go as far as that in shocking yourself into not looking with lust. But we need to have a built-in mechanism that when we see those things that would cause us to think wrong, that we immediately, just like our hand touching something too hot, look away. We need to refuse to look with lust, whether it's a magazine, whether it's in the newspaper, whether it's on television, the internet. Don't allow yourself to look with lust. That, my friend, is where it starts. And then lastly this morning, resist impure thoughts. Understand that this is where it starts. Now, the Bible speaks of our heart. Turn over, if you will, to Matthew chapter 15. You should already be in Matthew 5, so it shouldn't be a long trip. Matthew chapter 15. And look at verse 19. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemy. Here we learn that where all of these actions come from is from our heart. When the Bible talks about our heart, it talks about the things that we dwell on continually. If you dwell on how you can steal something from somebody and not get caught, probably pretty soon you'll be acting upon those things you've been thinking about. It's the same way with adultery. But listen, tonight we can win the battle for the heart by resisting impure thoughts. We can choose not to dwell on those things that cause lust. There's a Chinese proverb that says this: you cannot prevent the birds of sorrow from flying over your head, but you can prevent them from building a nest in your hair. Now, I would submit to you thoughts of temptation, the temptations that we encounter on a daily basis, are the same way. You may not be able to prevent that billboard that you drive past every day that has that image on it. You may not be able to prevent many things that come into your life. But what you can prevent is prevent those birds from building a nest in your hair. Not allow yourself to dwell on those things which cause you to lust. Resist impure thoughts. Take control of your mind. Now, I came across, as I was studying for this message, I came across an article that really I just was impressed with and thought it would be helpful to you this morning. It's entitled, Developing a Plan to Beat Temptation. And even though it wasn't written with the idea of adultery necessarily and lustful thoughts in that capacity with the lust of the eyes, it can be applied to that. How to beat temptation. The first question that you need to ask yourself, when am I most tempted? When is it that you're most tempted to give in to those lustful thoughts? He says, if you look carefully, you'll notice that you are tempted on certain days more than others. For instance, maybe on Monday morning when you get back to the office, you're tempted to be frustrated, short-tempered, or irritated with people. On Friday, you may be tempted to unwind from a tough week in a way you shouldn't. On Saturday morning, you may be tempted to be lazy and waste time. See when it is, what day of the week, that you have the difficulty with those lustful kind of thoughts. Be aware of it. You know, also, it can apply to certain times of the day. Maybe you're tempted in the late afternoon. Maybe you're tempted late at night when everyone else is in bed. The important thing is realize when it is that you are susceptible to that temptation, and then do something about it. If it's late at night, if it's early in the morning, if it's after work, whatever it may be, if it's on a Friday after work, then make plans not to allow yourself to be tempted during that time. The next thing to ask yourself, where am I tempted most? Maybe it's when you go into a certain store. Maybe when you go to somebody's house. Know where it is that you're tempted, and then listen, stay away from that place. Know where you're tempted and stay away. Here's another question to ask yourself. So when am I most tempted? Where am I most tempted? Who am I with when I'm tempted? Some people are more tempted when they're alone. Others are more tempted when they're with people, usually certain types of people. Maybe you're tempted when you're out with the guys or out with the girls to do certain things. Recognize that and don't hang around those kind of people. If it's when you're alone, don't allow yourself to be alone at those times when the temptation is there. Then the next question. What temporary benefits do I get when I give in? What temporary benefits do I get when I give in? Be honest with yourself. Understand, sin is pleasurable. Did you hear me? Sin is pleasurable. If it wasn't, if it was like going in for a root canal, none of us would have any problem with it. But sin is pleasurable. The catch is, it's for a season. In the long term, it's going to cause more pain and more heartache than you could ever imagine. But it's pleasurable for the moment, and that's why we are tempted to do it. Figure out what it is that the benefit is from that temptation that you're involved in. And then once you figure out what it is that that temptation is fulfilling, then what you need to do is look for healthy ways to fulfill those feelings. And what's interesting is God has made a healthy way for us to fulfill all of those feelings that we have. And then here's an interesting one. How do I feel right before I'm tempted? He says you need to know your emotional triggers. Maybe you get so frustrated that you don't know what to do and you give in to temptation. Or maybe you get mad and that leads to your temptation. He says know the emotions that make you vulnerable to temptation. And then when you sense that you are feeling that emotion, then you'll know, hey, I got to be careful right now because it's when I feel like this, it's now. It's when I'm feeling like this that I'm susceptible to the temptation. So let me review those real quick. I hope maybe those be a help to you. When am I most tempted? Where am I most tempted? Who am I with when I'm tempted? What are the temporary benefits when I give in to temptation? And then how do I feel right before I'm tempted? I hope this morning that you'll decide that you're going to renounce sex outside of marriage. That you're not going to laugh about it, that you're not going to listen to a friend talk about it and say, oh yeah, well as long as you know, that you're going to take a stand and say, listen, that is for marriage only. And if you go around the way that God has said to do something, you're going to pay the price. We need to take a stand against it. Then we need to refuse to look with lust. And then we need to resist impure thoughts. One last thought this morning and I'll be done. Some of you may know the figure from history, King Henry VIII. We've got a couple of little riddles, little devices, mnemonic devices to keep up with how many wives he divorced or beheaded or killed. I mean, he was horrible. Adultery was rampant in King Henry VIII's life. In fact, some of you may know the little mnemonic devices. Here's one of them. This is what happened, the fate of his different wives. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. Rough. There's another alternate version to that. King Henry VIII, to six wives, he was wedded. One died, one survived, two divorced, two beheaded. Now, King Henry was wicked. Adultery was rampant in his life. There was a bishop named Latimer, official title, Bishopric of Worcester, during the reign of Henry VIII. It was the custom back in those days that on New Year's Day, each of the bishops would come and present a gift to the king. Latimer went with the rest of his brethren to make the usual offering. But instead of a purse of gold, he presented the king with a New Testament. in which was a leaf, double down to this passage, Hebrews 13:4. We looked at it earlier. The first part says that marriage is honorable and all, and the bed undefiled. Then the second part says, whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. Now that took some real courage for Latimer to present that to King Henry VIII. Because believe me, he wasn't afraid to kill people on a whim. But he told King Henry VIII the truth. Now, as we think about King Henry VIII, we think, you know, he's so wicked, he's so sinful, that horrible person. But understand this morning the reality. Jesus says that if we look with lust, we're just like King Henry VIII. We have adultery in our heart. In essence, we're no better than that murderous, adulterous king. This morning, I would encourage you, let Latimer give you the same warning that he gave Henry VIII. Understand how serious God looks at the sin of adultery. Understand that Hebrews 13:4 applies to us just as much as it applies, to King Henry VIII. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled, but whoremongers and adulterers God would judge. Let's understand how serious it is, and let's remove every form of adultery from our lives.